Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 14th of September. Very nice to have you with us as we join together and figure out what's happening in our world. It is very nice to be in your company. Let us also welcome the other members of our company this morning, our wonderful panel. They will help us, help guide us through these topics that we need to discuss this morning. Also, we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let me introduce the group. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joseph. I'm fine. I'm just putting one foot in front of the other and proceeding.
Perfect. That's great.
Yes.
Yes. Good. Excellent. We welcome investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you? Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Monday, and to be sparring with Libby for the first time in a long while.
That's good. That's great. We're excited. Libby Post is a political consultant and a former regular sparring partner with Rosemary Armeo. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well,
good.
Thank you.
I would be remiss because we weren't on last week. I have to wish Alan and Roselle a happy 50th anniversary.
Oh, that was just then. Now we're working on the 60th.
Yeah, right.
The next big milestone.
Thank you, dear.
She's a woman of valor.
That's what she says.
which means you have to give her diamonds and rubies. That's what that's all about, honey.
And you think I don't? I do.
I don't see her jewelry box.
She got a new diamond ring. What about that?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What do you make of that? Yeah.
Good man.
Yes, I am.
We also welcome Jim Ketter, Bard Center for Civic Engagement, Senior Fellow and Dean of the School of Continuing Education at the American University Cairo. I think I screwed that up, didn't I? A senior fellow at Bard Center for
Civic
Engagement.
No,
is that right?
It's all right.
Did I get that right? Okay.
Jim, it's all right. Yes. Go ahead.
Jim Ketterer is the man's name. Forget his title. The important part is Jim's here. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well, and I'm just glad that no one has announced at the beginning of the show that they're going to be sparring with me. So I'll just try to float like a butterfly and not sting like a bee. Yeah.
That means you're being ambushed. That's worse, Jim.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Speak for yourself.
Well, I welcome you all. It's delightful to have you here, and let us get started and talk about the news of the day. All right. We begin. Well, first of all, we could start in many different places. Does the panel at large have any request of where they would like to start? Hearing nothing, I'll talk about the president going to California. How does that sound?
Okay, somebody's got their thingy open. You got to close the thingy.
Yeah, that means shut off your radio.
That is, I believe is a misdemeanor in at least 48 of the contiguous states. But I think it's fixed.
That's better.
Okay, yes, that is better. Yeah. So when President Trump flies to California on Monday to assess the state's raging forest fires, he will come face to face with a grim consequence of a reality he has stubbornly refused to accept, the devastating effects of a warming planet. To the global scientific community, the areas of scorched earth and ash-filled skies across the American West are the tragic but predictable result of accelerating climate change. Nearly 2 years ago, federal government scientists concluded that greenhouse gas emissions from burning fossil fuels could triple the frequency of severe fires over the western states. But the president has used his time in the nation's highest office to aggressively promote the burning of fossil fuels, chiefly by rolling back or weakening every major federal policy intended to combat dangerous emissions. At the same time, Trump and his senior environmental officials have regularly mocked, denied, or minimized the established science of human-caused climate change. Now, as he battles for a second term in the White House, Mr. Trump has doubled down on his anti-climate agenda as a way of appealing to his core supporters. At a rally in Pennsylvania last month, he blamed California's failure to clean your floors of leaves, threatening to make them pay for it because they, quote, don't listen to us. Meanwhile, the stark reality is that as of right now, As of this moment, massive clouds of smoke from the Pacific Northwest wildfires are lingering over the region, posing serious health risks for millions of people and complicating firefighting efforts, even as crews reported progress in slowing some of the blazes. The air quality across Oregon was listed as hazardous or very unhealthy by state environmental officials on Sunday. Oregon officials said Sunday evening that crews are struggling to contain more than 30 fires still raging across the state, one of them stretching more than 55 miles wide, part of a burned area that is larger than Rhode Island. Similar warnings about smoke were in place for California to Washington State. In San Francisco, residents were advised to remain indoors and block air from seeping into their homes. In Seattle, the air quality index topped 200, the level considered very unhealthy. Alan, we'll begin with you.
Well, the only thing I can say, and I don't have much to say about this, is I feel very badly, not only for all the people out there, but all the people in our area who have relatives and friends and children, there. If you were a new parent and you have a baby and the smoke is in the air, it's not good for anybody, and it certainly isn't good for the child. So that we all feel for those people, our fellow Americans, who are out there and who are really in bad shape. And the second question I have is, what in the world did Oregon do to deserve what's happened to it? I mean, it is this tiny little this state, you know, that has such bona fides, and it's such a decent place for so many decent people. It just has really been a hell of a year. And that's what I have to say, not much more.
Rosemary, as far as the president headed to the state of California, after not saying a lot, or if anything, on this issue of the California fires as the good part of the western section of the United States.
Yeah, I wonder about his motivation. He certainly is not going to be any more moved by the haze in the sky and burned buildings and charred wildlife than he is sitting in Washington, where he does not care about these things. They do not touch him, and these things also apparently do not touch his base, which is willing to overlook it, to make jokes about raking the forest and to ignore the overwhelming, but it's scientific, which is what they disdain, evidence that this is coming about because of careless inattention to the environment. He has no intention of making any issue that would help California or Oregon or Washington the way he did, for example, with Florida, and he went there and banned more offshore oil exploration, even though states with Democratic governors asking for the same thing have not gotten that. His is a play to the base and only help Republican administration. And I don't think this little bit of theatrics today going out to the fire, or maybe he wants to wear a fire hat, look like a big, strong guy. I don't know. I don't get it.
And there's certainly a connection to be made between this indifference to this and his indifference to the tens of thousands of people who have died of COVID-19.
You think there is a difference or there is no difference?
There is no difference.
I agree with that. It's like his followers who say, oh, this is a hoax of a pandemic. Show me anybody who died, meaning those 200,000 people dead were not within his own circle of friends or relatives or even acquaintances, perhaps. And so, therefore, he doesn't have to pay attention to it. Followers going after a leader who promotes that sort of thinking is very frightening. I don't like what's becoming of America, and this seems to epitomize that to me.
Jim Ketter.
So I'm one of those people who has family members out there in northern Nevada, with the smoke coming across the top of the Sierra Nevadas and then settling in to the valleys below. You mentioned, Joe, that Seattle was above 200 in Nevada, in northern Nevada yesterday. It was at 251, an extremely dangerous situation with regard to the smoke. And the president was also in Nevada yesterday, outside of Las Vegas, holding a big indoor, largely unmasked rally, and taking it to the the governor of Nevada, saying the state needs to open back up. The governor is just a political hack. And so the spectacle continues.
I guess politically, and we should mention that Joe Biden also is going to be planning a trip out west as well to focus on the fires. Obviously, those trips will be very different. But does it work for him, Alan, of what Jim and, well, what all of the panelists just described, what Jim and Rosemary especially described, though, to the base, that nod to the base and going out west and saying, for whatever the reason, but, you know, what is the motivation if you're just going to tear them apart when literally they're burning?
Well, you know, I have absolutely no idea. I can't get inside this guy's head as hard as I try. It makes no sense to me. You know, I don't know what he's about, and I don't know why he's doing it. I can only say, one could guess, you know, that a president is expected to respond. And if you don't respond, and if you don't show some empathy, then people in other states will say, what kind of guy is this?
Right.
So he goes and he does it. On the other hand, it is so suspect that he goes to states where he knows he has no chance of electoral success. I have no idea why he's doing it, other than to suggest that, you know, he thinks it's a presidential thing to do in a time when an election is going to be held in less than 2 months. Unbelievable.
Yet he doesn't know how to act presidential. You know, I mean, he goes and he blames California for the fires. He blames the victims all the time. And, you know, he hasn't really said much because Washington, Oregon, California, they all have Democratic governors. He's not helping any state with a Democratic governor, which, you know, we read about this morning. The idea of politicizing this stands against everything that the presidency should stand for, not that this president stands for, but what it should stand for. And so more people are going to die because of his absolute narcissistic neglect of anyone he doesn't see as valuable.
What do you think, Libby? Do you think if this was not an election in less than 2 months, that he would be doing this?
I think he would be going and throwing out paper towels just like he did in Puerto Rico after the hurricane.
You know, and this is a situation that is only expected to get worse over the next several days. The firefighters in California and Oregon are bracing for stronger winds that could partly clear the air, but also... Hello.
That is not Murray. That's not Murray. Murray's a good dog.
It's Shayna. I'm not sure. She's barking at something, but, you know, there's never anything out there. So,
well,
who knows?
Someday you'll believe Shayna and everything will be fine. The arrival of stronger winds on Sunday tested the resolve of fire crews already exhausted by weeks of combating blazes and that have consumed around 5 million acres of forest, incinerated numerous communities, and created what in many places was measured as the worst air quality on the planet. The 24 people in the last week have died. It has engulfed the region in anguish and fear. And when you talk about a region being basically three states of California, Oregon, and Washington, it's a huge issue and one that doesn't seem to be getting any better, and one that can only, over the next couple of days, you're praying for good weather. Obviously, the crews, the firefighters, are battling as much as they possibly can. But you do wonder, as far as like help that the president could bring, of what that could look like, of what that could be. And I don't know.
Can I talk about this? It was a really good show on NPR yesterday about what could you do if you were like an actual leader in California,
yeah,
in the West, and fire burning. And the answer is exactly the same as for coronavirus. No, Trump did not start the virus. He did not really want it to spread, but he came up with no national plan to combat it. And that's the same thing here. This does not get fixed in one fire season. You're talking about a long-term change in management of forests. You do control burns, which now are incredibly scientific and precise, but they take a lot of time to set up and do right, and coordination across communities. In other words, it can't be done at the local level. It has to be done at the top. This is the role of government. We liberals who talk about the need for a strong government, this is where you see that need, and Trump has completely abdicated that.
Well, and that's a great point, as is the fact that we've had reminders. I mean, there have been, the last few fire seasons have been horrendous. If we could have used those as the impetus to start exactly what you were talking about, which we ignored.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anybody else, Jim?
No, I mean, I think in general, this is a longer term problem than just this administration, as with many things that we talk about. This administration is exacerbating things, but the role of government, the relationship between the federal government and the states, all of those things, these are things that have really been, they should have been addressed a long time ago, and they haven't, by multiple administrations and multiple levels of government.
Rosemary, how'd you like to be taking a census in one of those states right now? It must be impossible.
Wow, it would be really. I don't like taking it here, so I can't imagine it there. and my selling point is, look, you know, if you don't get counted, you don't get any government services. They're not getting any government services except for firefighters, which aren't those locally funded. So, I think it would be really hard out there.
We're going to take a break.
And by the way, it would probably cost them a lot of resources, because if they're not counted, as you say, Rosemary, and that's certainly what's going to happen here.
You're going to lose funding for projects. And as for the enumerators
and
walking around, I complain of heat here, but smoke and, it would be. I'm sure that there's a big interruption, and we could talk. You're trying to get a break, but we could talk about whether there'll be a delay. This census will not be done accurately if it ends at the end of this month.
All right, we are going to take a break. We can pick that up when we come back. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Jim Ketterer, Libby Post, and Rosemary Armeo making up the panel. And yes, we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will continue our conversation after this short break.
Son, give me your number now. It's a what's your number? I don't answer. It's a what's your number, man? I don't answer. It's a what's your number now? It's a what's your number now? I say, hey, 54, 46, that's my number.
Bye. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Music this morning from Toots and the Maytals. Toots Hibbert, who was a reggae ambassador and leader of Toots and the Maytals, died over the weekend. He was 77 years old. That's the music we'll be hearing this morning. And you can see an entire playlist on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. wamc.org/roundtable for the playlist. People all the time write to us and say, what was that music? It's always on the website. Just check there, and we'll help you out as well, but know that it's there. Okay, let's go to a few of the letters that we have regarding the subjects that we have discussed so far, and then we'll move on to other subjects. Callie writes and says the motivation for Trump's trip out west is that he heard Biden was going, and he needs to be there first. Thomas says, Michael Cohen said it, and I believe it. Trump is cheap. Going to visit the wildfires is free airplay. He'll take it, and we pay for it. Terrible. He's a do-nothing chaos monger. He's a lying, lying, lying liar, as Alan would say. Let's see. Sean says, couldn't Trump be going to get in their face to mock and signal to his base, let them burn? He's mean and has won on mean slash cruel. Horrible thought. But that's what it looks like to me. Rosemary, you agree with that? Or a possibility,
yes,
anyway?
Yes, I said it better than I did, but too. Yes. Right.
I'm sorry, Alan?
Not me.
It was Libby. Okay, go ahead, Libby.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, you know, he's perfected the politics of mean. And I do think he's going to go and say something about how, well, if you had cleaned the floors, this would never have happened. The floors of the forest, this would never have happened. But he seems to, you know, as usual, not recognize that these wildfires have been going on every summer for years because of climate change. But he'll come in and say, oh, here's some more. Here's a bucket for you. Have fun.
And as Mac points out, that many of these fires are in U.S. forest areas, so why is California responsible for federal land, which is a very good question. Obviously not all of it, but some.
No, but if Trump had his way, they'd be, you know, drilling oil or doing whatever it is they all want to do for all the fossil fuels in those lands. So he doesn't care about that.
Let us switch gears. We do welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let's look at while we're talking about politics and where the candidates are going, why don't we talk a little bit about the state of Florida and what is going on there. We should note a couple things of interest. One is that this is a state that is still very close. The numbers, it's according to the latest poll numbers, that it is a very close race. Elections in Florida are won by running up margins in favorable terrain while losing more closely in hostile precincts. Joseph Biden visits the state tomorrow on Tuesday for the first time since claiming the nomination. And so how will it go in Florida? Meanwhile, we learned that Mike Bloomberg, former presidential candidate, former mayor of the city of New York City, has now said that he will spend $100 million in Florida to help Joe Biden. The move came as the polls, as I mentioned, show a tight race in Florida, and after criticism that the New York billionaire has not delivered on his promise to put his fortune behind defeating President Trump. Alan, what will $100 million buy in the state of Florida?
Well, $100 million will buy a lot, because the ads, which point out, you know, what the assets of Joe Biden are and what the deficiencies of Trump are, will play all day long. And so, you know, it can't, like chicken soup, it can't hurt, that's for sure. The other thing is, Florida is such a close state. It's unbelievable. You have a whole bunch of different things going on there. You have senior Cubans who have aligned themselves with Republican and right-wing politics for a long time, younger Cubans who are much more interested in accepting of social change, so that there's that going on. But you saw with Al Gore and you saw everything else. One of the things I'll never forgive Al Gore for was not fighting it. Nevertheless, well, I saw one recent poll which showed it at 48-48. Now, that's as close as it really can get. And Florida is a state that actually Biden could do without if he absolutely had to, but Trump cannot. And so, therefore, it becomes an extraordinarily important and sensitive political area.
Rosemary.
Good analysis, Alan.
Thanks.
Did you want to add anything, Rosemary?
Yeah, I am really disappointed by the Cuban response, which is pro-Trump, strongly pro-Trump. I'm not sure Biden can undo that. It just seems so self-defeating. Trump is a lot more Castro-like than Biden will ever be, and that seems to be lost. So that said, it's in suburbs and in urban areas, and I think in those are areas that that advertising will have a big effect on. You add to Bloomberg's infusion of money for Democratic publicity the lack of money that Trump is suffering right now. We talked last week about his cash shortfall. So I'm hoping that this is a state where money and resources will actually make a difference because, as you say, Biden doesn't have to win it, but he can't let Trump overwhelmingly get it. He just cannot.
September 3rd, there was a Quinnipiac University poll that shows Biden at 48%, Trump at 45%, so Biden up by 3. But as Alan indicated, the latest poll on September 8th from Marist College had Biden and Trump both at 48. So, yes, very, very close. Libby.
I think it would be much better for Biden to win it. Because of all the electoral votes, we can't ignore the electoral college here. But I think $100 million will go a long way in many of the media markets in Florida. You have some expensive media markets, Orlando, probably the West Palm area and Miami, but the rest of the state's media markets are sort of like ours. And so, midpoint. So they'll be able to buy a lot of ads and blanket the state and to get Biden's message out consistently. This is a 548, I think they call them. This is an independent expenditure committee. It's not coming directly from Joe Biden, so you're not going to see Joe Biden say, I approve this message. But the messaging will be consistent, and it will be very anti-Trump. It's these kinds of independent expenditure committees that can be as negative as they want because, they're not running for office, but they can spend their time showing the foibles just like the Lincoln Project does.
So do you think there's there's never supposed to be coordination, right, Libby, between the people who are getting the money and the so-called independent groups who are doing it, but there's got to be a certain amount of knowledge about how far to go and whether or not the Biden people would be objecting to it.
I think there's a wink and a nod. I think on both sides. I don't think it's, that it's only on one side or the other. I think there's a wink and a nod. I think that there are, casual conversations, but really the law is very clear. You can't corroborate and the campaigns are really, really not supposed to know what the other side is planning. That doesn't mean you can't have a conversation about messaging. But once that conversation about messaging is over, they really can't know what they're planning. Because you can have conversation about messaging with anybody.
Well, Libby, you're an expert. This is what you do for a living. So I want to ask you a question. What is it that you buy with your money on television? How important do you think it is?
Well, it's a double-edged sword. It's important to saturate the market with your messaging so that every time somebody looks up, your name is out there. Just like any commercial venture, like Nike or McDonald's or anything else, you've got to get the name out there. You've got to establish the credibility of the candidate. The problem that sets in is campaign ad fatigue. And by the time Election Day rolls around, even somebody like me is like, enough already. And so the campaigns have to be cognizant of that, so that they have to constantly, you know, be changing the ads. You know, you'll see for a week the same ad, and then the next week the ads will change, and then the next week the ads will change, so that while the message is the same and the visual of the Biden-Harris logo is the same and all of that for his campaign, you know, the ads will be different. And the same thing goes with all these other ones. I mean, the Lincoln Project is trying to get on into many of the media markets, and their ads, they are branded. They look the same. They use that, you know, the black and white and the very harsh transitions and all that sort of stuff. But there are different messaging, and they're even going after, like, you know, Miss Graham down in, Miss Lindsay down in South Carolina. So, you know, it's something that has to happen, and you have to have enough money. That's the other part of this. To really make an impact, you have to have enough money to be able to saturate and do the news adjacencies, to do prime time, and to blanket cable. Sorry.
But it doesn't always work. That's for sure.
No.
I mean, we recently saw a congressional candidate. Every time I turned on the television, there was this guy. Somebody.
Yeah, but the other guy was on more. The other guy was on more, and the other guy was on earlier, establishing his credibility.
Well, I don't know about more. I don't know about more because I saw an awful lot of this particular fellow. But but maybe that's just my sensitivity to the whole thing.
Yeah.
But you have to buy. But you have to buy the right thing. You have to send the right message, and then you have to have the right home base. In the case of that congressional election, home base for one candidate was tiny Holyoke, and the other relatively tiny, and the other one at Springfield, which was so many more people. So
the whole district, because he was the incumbent. You know,
So there's that.
You know, but it's interesting to watch. You know, if some of these candidates, they get down to really targeting, so the ads on HGTV are different than the ads on the Food Network or TNT or whatever, when you do the cable buys. You can be much more flexible with cable. But you're not getting the eyeballs that the networks get during the news hour. During the rest of the day, I'm not so sure, but during the news hour.
Let us pause there and take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We do have letters on these subjects, plus we'll move on to other stuff. And we just want to hear from you. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, and Jim Ketterer. We'll be right back. Right. Want to get to a couple of the letters, a few of the letters that we have this morning, and that will hopefully get us to the top of the hour. And then when we come back, we'll go on to a new subject. Vincent writes to us about the Bloomberg money and says, although I personally like Mike Bloomberg, I would have considered voting for him for president. I am totally opposed to anyone individual with so much money influencing politics. I would say the same thing if it were the Koch brothers. This just goes to show you the Citizens United decision was, in my opinion, the worst Supreme Court decision of all time. It was the end of democracy as we know it.
But you know,
Joe,
can I
say something?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Just about Florida in general and perhaps about the Bloomberg money. I think this highlights again that, I mean, whoever is going to win in Florida is going to win by a percentage point or two. And it's 29 electoral votes hanging in the balance. And so all this money is streaming in there, but it's winner take all. And so it's not just that it's the electoral college, but it's that the states, except for two of them, Nebraska and Maine, have decided that winner take all is going to be the system of apportioning these electoral votes. So that means that, you know, some huge percentage of Floridians will have their votes essentially not count toward the presidential election. And one percentage more, whoever wins it, will have all their votes count. And that can be changed. That does not take a constitutional amendment to change that, but the states are reluctant to do it.
To say nothing, right? To say nothing of a Republican governor, a Republican secretary of state, a loaded election, which I'm very, very worried about. Okay, so the letter writer makes some very good points, but there's one that he didn't make. This country faces the worst crisis it is ever, constitutional crisis we have. We have a guy who's talking about running for a third term when you're not allowed to under the United States Constitution. That's Trump. And you have a guy who looks like he is leading us down the road to totalitarianism. So now you say, well, I'm opposed to Mike Bloomberg spending that $100 million. I don't think Mike Bloomberg wanted to spend the $100 million. But let me say that when you're dealing with this kind of a situation where this kind of a president offers such a threat to the United States, I'll take his $100 million and I'll take it fast. And I think it's great
me
he's doing
too.
It.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah. I think that spending $100 million by one rich, to us, right-thinking person as a counter to Citizens United is appropriate. I agree. It may not be the worst. Dred Scott was a pretty bad decision. So was Brown versus the Board of Education, right. I guess, the situation that led to that. But this is certainly one of the worst decisions from the Supreme Court ever. It's just totally messed with the balance between fairness in elections. It's totally messed with campaign finance laws that we have struggled with for years. It's made corporations way too powerful. It's a terrible, terrible law, and it ought to be changed, and I don't see that happening. So in the meantime, this is a very good counter to it. Okay, he's going to take advantage of that bad law to do good for a different side. That's great.
I mean, if
could,
we don't
can I also
the
just
same...
Libby and then Jim.
Okay.
I mean, if we don't use the same tools, we're at a strategic disadvantage. So if we've got the money, and yes, I know Citizens United, and yes, it's a rich guy pumping money in, but you know what? Trump's got Sheldon Adelson behind him and some of the richest people in the country, even though he seems to be struggling with money. So we have to use the same tools that are in the toolbox. Otherwise, we'll be at a strategic disadvantage, and we can't afford that.
Jim.
Agree with that. However, I would say that it's the need to do such a thing is reflective of the sad reality of how people make decisions about who they're going to vote for. Whoever they're going to vote for, that if you're making your decision based upon an ad that you see on TV, and I don't care who the candidate is, you're really not going to learn anything substantive about anything through these advertisements. That's a sad reality of how we're deciding elections in this country. And I think is symptomatic of a much broader problem than just this immediate election.
Would the gentleman stand for a critique of what you just said?
Please. I'm sitting, but go ahead.
Well, then stand up. The reason that it's so important is that...
Is
you
this
know,
sparring, by the way? Go ahead.
Ads, you know, political ads can tell the truth. If you have a guy like Trump, and he's doing the kinds of things that we all see him doing virtually every day, from screwing up our response to the COVID and to the rest, I think an ad can tell that, and an ad can say that, and people will have a sense, well, this ad makes sense. If he's beating his chest and saying, I'm the greatest president who ever was, and I should have the Nobel Prize, and I should have this and that, I think people will make sense of that, too.
Helen, I have to disagree. I don't think TV ads are about truth-telling. I understand the need to have them, but I think they're, like Libby said before, it's about selling Nike or selling, you know, whatever the product is. It's product positioning, it's eyeballs on the TV, it's saturating the market, all of that Madison Avenue lingo. I don't think there's much truth telling, no matter who your candidate is.
I think it's crazy to think that we're ever going to have a citizenry so educated, so sophisticated, that it will sit down and compare policy papers side by side, take all the white papers and compare them and make what you would call an educated decision. It has ever been the Lincoln Douglas debates were the equivalent of our TV ads today. You make you get an impression of a guy, and it's been a guy up to now, and you figure out whether that aligns with what you like, not even your own self-interest, just whether you like it or not, and you vote. So, good. Use those TV ads well.
All right. Couple more letters, and then we're going to go to a break here. We go to Oliver, who says the best way to spend $100 million is to pay off restitution fees for former felons so they can vote. Bert says, it was Eric who says, not only do the fires in the West and the hurricanes in the Gulf provide the opportunity for Biden to emphasize climate change, but the Rittenhouse shooting in Kenosha and the attack on cops in Los Angeles bring up the need for him to speak more prominently about the need for gun control. He can point out that the 1992 crime bill, for which he has been so heavily criticized, including a ban on assault weapons. This issue is a winner in the polls. Hopefully the participation of Bloomberg will encourage him to feature his stance on both gun control and climate more than he has so far.
Now, let's remember that it's 48-48 there. I'd love to hear what Libby has to say about this, but it's 48-48 now. I'm assuming that people on the Republican side are more heavily invested in gun control than the people on the Democratic side. So the writer is correct. Americans don't like guns. They just don't. They own them, but they don't like it. They think it's over proliferation. So my question is whether or not Bloomberg should attack on the basis of guns when a group he needs to vote and to convince are on the other side. See what I mean?
I do. Anyone else? All right.
I just add that I really like the idea of the letter writer to pay off the fines of felons. That is, the state government there has made such a mockery of the vote by the electorate to let felons vote again, that it would be delicious to see Bloomberg pay off a bunch of fines, let people vote, and then make ads about that Democrats are trying to get the vote and voice to back to the people. That's a great idea.
And now we take a break. We are going to go over to news with Ray Graff. We welcome you, in the meantime, to write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. It is the 14th of September. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, and Jim Ketterer. Most of the time on this program, I look to my role as one of facilitator. Today, at this moment, I will freely admit I am going to play the role of agitator. Let me start with this article and hopefully it'll go exactly where I think it's going to go. Senator Bernie Sanders is privately expressing concerns about Joe Biden's presidential campaign, according to three people with knowledge of the conversation, and is urging Biden's team to intensify its focus on pocketbook issues and appeals to liberal voters. Sanders, the runner-up to Biden in the Democratic primaries, has told associates that Biden is at serious risk of coming up short in the November election if he continues the vaguer, more centrist approach, according to people who spoke on the condition of anonymity to describe sensitive talks. The senator has identified several specific changes he'd like to see, saying Biden should talk more about health care and his economic plans and should campaign more with figures among young popular liberals such as Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Rosemary, what do you think?
Jeez, I can just see the letters pouring in. But Bernie, stop it. Shut up. Hillary was told by Democrats when she lost the election that she had to shut up and not tweet and not do this. This is so unhelpful. So unhelpful. Why don't you get out and start talking about those things and talk up Biden instead of talk down Biden?
And this is what a lot of people, I'm sorry, but Alan, this is what a lot of people were fearing from Bernie Sanders.
And that's because, as Freud said, character is character. And he just can't stop him. He can't stop himself. That's what he does. That's who Bernie is. You like him, you love him. You don't like him, you hate him. Or you could not like him. So obviously he knew going into this what this was going to be and that he had to lend his support to Biden. What's more important, taking an intellectual differential in your own party and taking Biden to task, or getting Trump the hell out of the presidency? Now, come on. This is not good.
Libby?
Well, Rosemary, I'm not going to argue with you. How's that?
Libby and I have had discussions about whether I badmouth Biden over small things. I'm not a big Biden lover, but I sure as hell want him rather than Trump. And Bernie says he does, but he's not acting as if he does, and he's got a lot more clout than I do. So he really does need to step up.
He needs to step up. He needs to shut up. And I'm sure we'll get letters. He needs to stay on message, and he needs to listen to his colleagues in the rest. He's not a Democrat, but I would hope that he would be caucusing and listening to his Democratic colleagues, especially Chuck Schumer, who I asked this question specifically of him when we met before the primaries were over. He met with a bunch of folks in Albany, and I said, you know, what's going to happen? Are they all going to fall in line? Are they all going to support? And he said, absolutely. And so here we have Bernie doing the Bernie thing and giving credence to the Bernie bros who will refuse to vote for Biden because they don't see that there's a difference between Trump and Biden, and they don't care. And so this gives them an excuse to stay home.
Jim.
You know, I think this also highlights a debate that's gone on over the past few years about how to run national elections. You know, the old method always was in the primary, you go toward the extremes and then you tack back toward the center during the generals. And Trump apparently won by not doing that, but that his strategy all along in 2016 and now is to motivate the base, solidify the base and turn them out, and that's it. And that the center doesn't matter because there's very little center left. And I think in a way, that's what Bernie thinks too, aside from the particular policy issues, that it's the base that matters. There's not much center anymore in American politics, and trying to go for that center like Biden is a fool's errand. And I think it's a big debate. I'd be interested to hear what Libby says about that.
I think he's wrong. I think this is a center-right country. I think we will swing back to that. And I think that Biden needs to shore up the independents. He needs to shore up the disaffected Republicans. And there are plenty of them. He needs to shore up suburban women. He needs to shore up some of these groups that will come out and vote. And so I do not agree that there's no middle anymore or no center anymore. I think that because things have become so polarized, all we see is one side or the other. And not to use Richard Nixon's term, but you do have this silent group of folks who don't live and die by politics like we do, but are watching and want a better quality of life. And they hopefully will see that keeping democracy alive and not having a president who he's a bully and all he can do is insult people and he really doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, he's a moron when it comes to policy. Hopefully these people will say, yeah, it's time for Biden. And I think that there are people quietly moving to Biden because of the way this man behaves. I saw a headline that Fox did a poll saying that the majority of the people think that Trump isn't emotionally capable of being president, that he doesn't have the temperament. And if you have Fox doing a poll and it's saying that, and you know the questions had to be skewed, it's an interesting dynamic that's happening.
Yeah.
The Washington Post article on this back and forth between Bernie Sanders and the Biden campaign says, it is rare for such a prominent party figure to repeatedly voice private criticisms of the party's nominee and acknowledge them publicly, this to Jim's point, especially in the campaign's final stretch. Sanders' decision to do so suggests the ongoing frustration among liberals who urgently want Biden to defeat President Trump, but are upset that he has taken a relatively centrist path. Biden is determined not to play into attacks from Trump seeking to cast him as a radical or a socialist. The nominee has distanced himself from elements in his party calling for defunding the police, implementing a single-payer health plan, and banning hydraulic fracturing or fracking. Sanders supports the latter two policies. Alan.
Well, that's right. He won his primaries by being a moderate. He's going to win if he wins here because he, like in Capture the White Flag, he mm-hmm. brings some Republicans over the line, and that's what this election is all about. Now you can say I'm a left person, and I insist that you just be outrageously on my side, but you won't win. I keep saying it. Do you want the guy out of there? This is one of the greatest embarrassments, and the possibility of leading us into a totalitarian nation that we have ever seen. So do you take the Biden advice and go moderate and therefore get people in the middle as well as a couple of people in the Republican Party in order to win? It's that simple.
Rosemary?
No, Alan's got it. Biden, as I said, is not my pick. I don't love him, but I think this vote is underestimated, those who want to get out Trump at all costs. And Biden is the best chance to do that. I think he proved that rather decisively during the primaries.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to a few letters, and then we'll move on to other topics. John says, as I look at the 538 polling, I believe slash hope the Democrats could have majority in the Senate. What does the panel believe? Alan.
Well, the question here is he going to rob it? Is Trump going to rob this election? Here's a guy who says I should have a third term. A third term, which the Constitution prohibits. So are you telling me that you trust him not to pull out all the stops, not to use the sycophants in Florida, the governor and the secretary of state and all the rest of them to corrupt the election? I believe, truly, I believe he will.
All right. And what about the Senate?
Well, I think right now the Senate looks like it's going to go Democratic. And that's a terribly important thing. Because if Trump wins, and I hope he doesn't, but if he wins, it would be magnificent to have a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Libby?
No, I agree. I mean, I think we're going to take both. I think it's going to be hard for it, but I have to remain hopeful. But I think if we take the Senate, which I think we're going to, and Susan Collins didn't do herself any favors last week. Then we have two houses that will hold him at bay. And, you know, the Democrats will be holding the cards because of the ability for them to pass things and possibly even getting veto-proof majorities. Well, I mean, I don't think that'll happen in that Senate,
it could possibly happen in
the House. But, you know, it'll change the dynamic, that's for sure.
think Alan and Libby paint a lovely, utopian, hopeful picture. I'm not at all sure that we're going to get there. It's a tremendous job to overturn that Senate. Look at the number of seats they need, and they're not just regular seats. They're seats of extremely powerful, well-financed senators, and overturning them is not as easy as it sounds. I know the voting is close, but the voting is close all over America right now. I don't think it means anything.
You may be right. You may well be right. The polling shows the Democrats have an advantage here. But I agree. And when you're dealing with incumbents, incumbency is a very powerful tool. And you know, all the political science research shows that the time that you are most vulnerable is after the first term. After that, you get comfortable. And so there are an awful lot of people here who are being counted out, and I don't know that you should be doing that.
Jim?
Well, if you can imagine the scenario where Trump wins, but the Democrats have both houses of Congress, particularly the Senate, how will the Democrats respond, not just in terms of governing day-to-day and questions of appointments, et cetera, but will they essentially try to undo the election results of 2020? Will they find a way to impeach Trump? Will they, you know, and what will that do to the nation? Will we see the country lurch into, you know, further instability because of the split between Congress and the executive, and how that's going to play out? I mean, we worry about Trump not accepting the results of the elections, but there's certainly scenarios in which the Democrats would also not accept the results of the presidential election. And either way, it becomes highly destabilizing.
Take the second one. How does that work? The Democrats say, okay, you stole the election to Trump, right? You stole it. And we're not going to sit still for it. What do they do?
No, wasn't saying that. If he steals it, that's one thing. But let's just say he wins. He wins outright. There's an article, a brand new article in the Atlantic Monthly by Shadi Hamid that I highly recommend, which is talking about the inability of either side to accept the election results and how we've gotten to this deeply corrosive moment in the United States where, like, no matter who wins, the other side's not going to believe it. And then what happens? Okay, even so if they win straight out.
So what do you make of that? I mean, what's the answer?
I think we're going to be in for a period of massive destabilization. And since we're talking about the Senate, that the Senate could then be used to go after Trump, and maybe for good reason. You know, they would have to lay out the particulars of the case, but it's going to just take us. It's not like we're going to get through this small patch and then it's going to be smooth sailing. We're going to have continued very rough seas.
You make a good point. However, I have to tell you, this is not the first time. When John Kennedy won miraculously in Illinois,
miraculously,
and those votes came in the middle of the night, those Republicans never forgot that. Not for years. And that Nixon-Kennedy election was a bone of serious contention, which a lot of political scientists and historians will tell you really set the stage for what we're going through now.
All right. No reply. Okay. Let's go back to some letters here, and we will.
I agree.
Jim's still not wanting to spar. All right. We go to Paul, who says, what's wrong with most of you? You're completely missing the point about that Bernie is making, and I can't emphasize that enough. It's not about getting in line. It's about Biden's completely passive, yes, lame campaign to date. Bernie is concerned. I'm alarmed. Biden's campaign is terrible. Another mamby-pamby Democratic effort, and he is in real danger of losing. Tell me, how did the same approach work out for the Dems in the last election?
Okay, so let's assume for a second that the letter writer is correct. You mean to say that Bernie, who obviously will be hurting the Democratic choice, is correct in doing what he's doing publicly?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Rosemary.
Yeah, it's typical Bernie supporter response that he's doing what's good, vigorous debate, blah, blah, blah. And what it really is an attack from a side that should be loyal to him. And that is seen by the actual opponents for exactly what it is. It's not healthy. It's not good. It's corrosive. That's the best word for it. If he really thinks that, and he may well be right. I'm not blown away by Joe Biden's campaign, but he should be talking to Joe and to his advisors. Isn't Biden's top political aide a former Bernie supporter? Why aren't they talking?
Well, that's a good.
Should not be here.
I think it's an interesting point that you make, though. I mean, I'm not ready. Who among the panel is ready to make? And I'm interested, I guess, in Libby's thought on this. Do we really think that Biden is doing that bad a job of campaigning? Noting that in some polls he's 10 points ahead.
The biggest story about Kamala Harris in recent weeks has been the sneakers she's wearing. I mean, she's not the firebrand that we expected. And Biden came out very slowly after the Democratic convention. I think Bernie has some points. He's traveling to California, so is Kamala, and then going to the Rust Belt again. I think he should be moving more.
I agree with you, but it's a tough thing to do.
It is tough, yeah.
As Joe says,
I do like
10 point.
That.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I do like that he's wearing a mask and he's social distancing and he's modeling appropriate public health-wise policy, which the president definitely is not. I like that.
I was interested in that mask thing. You know, the last time I saw Biden on TV, he did not have the mask on as he was speaking. I think their research is showing that it's too scary for a lot of people. So that when you're speaking, when you're doing a public address, you take the mask off. Now, I know I've seen him with the mask on, but you better believe everything here is being done right, Libby and Rosemary. This stuff is being done by the numbers. They're polling all the time. They're
mm-hmm.
finding out what people are thinking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the way you do it. I mean, people keep saying to me, well, 2016 was a totally different animal than what we're dealing with now. Trump was unknown in terms of his politics. I mean, yeah, he was racist and all that, but nobody thought it would be what it is today. We would get that our democracy would be eroded to this point. And so I think that, you know, while there were people who voted the misogynist line, they hated Hillary for whatever stupid reason, and, oh, let's give him a chance. I think there are a lot of those people who said, let's give him a chance. Like, oh, my God, what the hell did I just do? Look
right.
at the consequence of my vote. This is not what I had intended.
I think that's right.
Jim?
I'm just wondering, about Bernie. So, and I think Rosemary was getting to this, too. So these are not private conversations since we know about them and we're talking about them. Who decided and for what reason to release it, to leak it, and to get it out there? What's the end game here? Mm. What are they hoping to do?
What do you think?
I do think also that I think Bernie could well just have a legitimate gripe about how national elections are being run these days. I mean, the previous letter writer talked about the namby-pamby kind of bland Democratic approach. I think that means the centrist approach. And I do think that there really is a legitimate debate going on about whether the nature of these elections has changed or not. I mean, I thought, you know, Libby gave a very good response, but so he could have a legitimate gripe, and it's not just about kind of positioning within the party. And be very worried that the campaign's going to lose. In the same way that Bill Clinton was worried as we got down to the final days of 2016.
Interesting. Rosemary, do you have anything on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I think that AOC has some of the same interest that they want the progressives want, and I support this, a massive change in politics. But that overlooks the immediate issue of 2020, which is getting Donald Trump out. Not only does their their debate end, but politics in general, governance in general, as we know it, ends if Trump gets back in. Now, he has given, Bernie has given lip service to this. I'll do anything to make sure Donald Trump is defeated. He said the same thing in 2016. But then he doesn't do the very simplest things that are required, which is to keep his followers focused on the issue of removing Trump first, and then we push our own agenda.
Alan, anything?
Well, you know, I think I'm in the Biden camp in that Biden won a series of primaries by pursuing a moderate stance. He got Democrats. After all, this is a center, as I think Libby or Rosemary said, center-right country to begin with.
Yeah, that was me.
And he won doing that. Now he's following the same course right now and hoping to get Trump the hell out of there. So far, if you read the polls, so far it's working. Now, when Bernie comes in, lights a Molotov cocktail and throws it, he knows what's going to happen. You know, the worst thing in the world is to have the fickle finger of fame on you and have it disappear. And then all of a sudden, you know, what are you going to do? You say, oh, boy, I think I'll have another helping of that. I think that's what's happening here. And we're heard in a lot of parts of Vermont. You know, I've always been a friend of Bernie's. I've interviewed him for years and years, again and again and again on the Congressional Corner. I have great respect for him and admiration. But I think I understand what's going on here.
You know, this could also have a positive effect for Biden because it makes him look like a more reasonable, thoughtful, right, prudent candidate, and that Bernie is just throwing Molotov cocktails.
Except for the fact that in the last election, a lot of Bernieites either sat on their hands or didn't vote. And that, remember that this election was won by 75,000 votes, nothing. So if this is an almost invitation for that to happen again, that would be awful.
We have to take a break.
I like the idea of what you said, Jim, but I don't think it fits with the Trump narrative that he's pushing, that Biden is this weak little sick old man who's under the power of the radical element in the party. And Bernie coming up now and doing this.
We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Into our last round on the panel this morning, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, and Jim Ketterer with us. We welcome your letters, panel at wamc.org. Quite a few letters, so I want to get to as many as we can in our time remaining. Jay writes, what really scares me right now is the media. Right now, everything is about Trump. If Trump is not elected, what will the media talk about? Does the media really want to lose Trump?
Well, let me tell you, Joe, we haven't had more active participation from our membership, from people who listen to WAMC, than when Trump got elected. People were scared. People have really been there for the philosophy and for us. I have to say that again and again, for the whole community. But I'll easily give that up to get rid of the guy.
Yeah, I don't think any of us would mind. Libby?
We've never run out of things to write about or talk about in the past.
No.
And Trump, even if he is defeated, there's getting him out of office, so that's lots of coverage. And then you don't think he's going to be on Fox and every place else, Alec Jones, talking about politics? He's still going to be in the media.
Well, my hope is he'll be in jail.
Right, that's what I was going to say. I think he's probably going to either be in one of two places, jail or Russia. I think he will run away.
And this is hopeful. It'll never happen. When have we ever put an ex-president or an ex-big official into jail? We just don't do that in this country.
Who has flown in the face of law and democracy. We have never had somebody this bad who's being sued by private citizens for rape and not paying bills and all the things that he doesn't do. You know,
how much jail time has he spent? No, I'm a big skeptic about this. He will not go to. He will not see any jail time.
As well, you should be. You know, if this is going to be something like a 48-50 election, something like that, or 51% election, and this country is equally divided, you're not going to want to put this guy in jail. I mean, all that will do is, now remember, this is the same guy who was yelling about Hillary, lock her up.
Right.
Remember that?
Right. Right.
Right.
Right.
It isn't going to happen. We'll have that same Gerald Ford, heal the nation, forgive all sins, let's move forward attitude.
Well, he had to do that after what he did.
Love revenge. I just don't see it happening.
He had it. Could I? Ford had it. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Jim Ketterer.
I would just say, so if Trump loses in November, the political dynamics that brought him to office and that have supported him, that I think started much earlier, will still be there. And so Trump, as I've said before, he is a symptom of a deeper issue. He's certainly exacerbated many things, but that issue will continue. And how the nation seeks to address that beyond the specifics of Trump and his immediate inner circle, that's a much tougher nut to crack.
Yep.
Let's go to other letters and the time that we have remaining. We go to this one, Nikki, who says, say it again and again, think Supreme Court. Even if people think Biden is too moderate, a vote for him is so, so important for the upcoming Supreme Court appointments. We need to keep getting that word out. Bernie, Roseanne writing on Bernie said, I wrote to Bernie and told him to stop it. Bernie should stop. It's better to get some of the Republican vote, like having the Lincoln Project support for Biden. I voted for Bernie, and like the rest of you, we need to remove Trump. Gary says, Dear panel, when you discuss what Bernie has a right to say that is covering politics, when you are distressed he might harm Biden, that is partisan politics. We need to discuss the issues. All right.
Okay.
He has the right to say anything he wants. We're not disputing his right to say.
No.
We're just disputing the sagacity of his saying it.
Peter says, Rosemary said, when have we ever thrown a former president in jail? You have to admit, Trump has broken every norm he can find so far. So that would be the other norm, of course.
Right. So why should we maintain our norms if he doesn't maintain his?
And would anybody like to bet that if he wins the second term, he won't start throwing people in jail like every other dictator has done?
Mm-hmm.
One way or the other?
I mean, it's interesting. I keep thinking about how much our democracy has eroded, but we're still on the air, right? And Randy Rainbow is still doing his thing, mocking him mercilessly. And so what will happen if he gets a second term? Will we be thrown off the air? Will Randy Rainbow be thrown in jail? Will we all end up in some type of long-term house arrest?
Yeah. What about the rest of the history of this country as we move forward?
Yeah.
I mean, there's little question when he says, "I don't care about the Constitution. I want a third term." Are you kidding? What do you think he's telling you?
Right.
Let's go to Ed and his airing of grievances. The Democrats are again to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Joe Biden's a decent older gentleman, but completely and predictably outclassed by master campaigner Trump. Why are we in this wholly predictable campaign crisis? And where is Kamala? Why are we not hearing loud statements from her? She also needs to drop the face mask when speaking publicly, says Ed. We go.
I'm guaranteeing you that Kamala is not calling these shots. This is the Bernie campaign. Excuse me, that's a Freudian slip. This is the Biden campaign. Biden's people are calling the shots, and they are telling her, we want to present a moderate view of who Biden is. We don't want to go out there and be castigating Trump to the point where people are, you know, are saying, well, these guys really are the radicals that Trump is saying. He wants to show a moderate face. When the time comes for Kamala, she'll be there. But right now, she doesn't call these shots.
Wesley says Biden is speaking out on gun control. If you are actually following him, you would know that.
Please.
I don't know if it's quite that tone, but
That's
how it sounded
in
my
ear. That was the tone. That's what I got, too. And I wrote back and said, nice.
These fires on the West Coast are burning in Senator Harris's home state. It looks bad for her not to be taking the lead in exposing the Trump administration's failure to respond. Does anyone know where Kamala Harris is? Well, I don't know. I see her all over the place.
She's on her way to California with emergency officials today.
Yeah. Exactly. Could the panel discuss how the Trump rally team has not been fined or arrested for holding events that clearly violate CDC guidelines or even White House guidelines? I would add to that note.
Or the governor's guidelines in that state, right. No more than 50 people. So is that backed by law? What do they do? Get a $50 ticket?
Some laws are simply not enforced. Do you know that you can be fined for not answering your census questionnaire? And yet I don't know of anybody who's actually been levied that fine.
Good point.
Good thing I answered.
I assume you want to hand out the fines yourself, Rosemary.
I'd like to government.
Trump is not that complicated, says William. He is a spoiled child who will do anything for attention. If it doesn't have to make sense as long as the attention is on him. So what does this say about his supporters? We go to Carolyn on the fires. Isn't there a danger of one of our nation's greatest food supplies? Also a very good point. Tom says, if the president truly believes that leaves and forest debris contributes to wildfires, it is his country. Why did he not direct the Forestry Service or appropriate agency to clean up those forests? Which was a point that was, I know, we talked about and brought up by another listener. Let's see. We're just about out of time, so no time to really go to another subject. We missed out on the vaccine story is mentioned that really early. It'll hold. Good point.
And anybody who wants the definitive answer on that, go to theberkshireedge.com and read my column on that very subject.
All right. Excellent. Alan, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you,
always
Joe.
A pleasure, as always. Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post, and Jim Ketterer, thank you very much. We will continue. PJ O'Rourke with us next on the Roundtable.